Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
I'm ready to blow with just one more sound.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbisn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Hope you guys all got your clocks changed, or it's probably been a very challenging week for you. And I'm thinking, what do we have? St. Patrick's Day coming up on Sunday. Happy St. Patrick's Day for those of you who are really Irish or just want to be for a day. And right after that, a few days after that, I believe, is the first day of spring. So there is hope for renewal, growth, and color out there. Yes, we are. Welcome to everyone in the chat room. Welcome to all of you listeners. I've been having some visual issues as well as a couple of other issues, so sorry if I was not quick or spelled wrong or made a typo in the chat room. Expect it, I guess. Expect it. This is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Talked about it last week. I actually talked about it the week before. Oh, by the way, I always forget to do this when I do the generic intro. I'm Kim Justice, your regular Wednesday night host, and I'm very fortunate that the second Wednesday of each month, I have a wonderful co-host who I'm going to bring on in just a moment, Karen Robinson. And for years, on the last Wednesday of each month, I've had our friend who hailed from England, now lives in California, but Simon Lewis, and he's been in surgery or recovering from surgery for about 6 months. I'm happy to say that he's supposed to be back. What would it be, in 2 weeks on the last Wednesday of the month? So we'll be really glad to have Simon back. He's been through hell, and most of you listeners can relate to that in one form or another. For him, it's just been in real time in the present and for a long time. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We Recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. If you'd like to know more about me, Kim Justice, you can check out my website at inaflash.org. How quickly our lives can change, right? Inaflash.org. And if you'd like to know more about Karen Robinson, HopeTBI.com is one of her websites. You can start there, and that'll drive you to another. She's got so many multi-talents these days, always been a good blogger, and that was a great site, now a life coach, and she keeps going to school. I'm not sure how she has the energy to do this anymore. But I don't know if she takes as many naps as I do, but she's really resilient, and that I admire. There's close to 3 million brain injuries a year, depending on where you look, what statistics you look at. But, you know, we all know, have heard of, or a little bit familiar with diabetes, cancer, heart disease. But I am amazed at the numbers that, you know, about 5.8 million people are living in the United States with a brain injury and the after effects, like Karen and I, the rest of the hosts on Brain Injury Radio. Like I say, close to 3 million have them every year, new brain injuries. I believe that TBI, or traumatic brain injury, is the third leading cause of death or disability for people age 65 and older, the older subset, or the very young. So pretty substantial numbers, and one of the things in Brain Injury Awareness Month, and then I'll be bringing Karen on just right directly, is, you know, we not only share with each other, you know, I was telling my guest last week when we were on air that he was an old-timer and I'm an old-timer, both literally and figuratively. His injury happened in 1975, mine in 1995, so we've been at this for a while, and both of us thought, you know, it'd be like a broken leg, or, you know, that took me 2 years when I broke my femur, but anyway, or a broken arm, something that gets hurt bad. The doctors do their thing, do the surgery or whatever they're going to do, get a little therapy, and then you go back to life as you knew it. And surprise, for an awfully large percentage of us, that isn't how it works. Our life changes that day, and our lives have gotten spared. Not everyone's so fortunate, but those of you listening and those of us talking tonight did make it through, which is fortunate, but nobody gave us, no pun intended, a heads up on the reality that there would be residuals of our brain injury that we would be on a journey with possibly for the rest of our life or a real long time, and that we'd be doing things both challenging that we weren't so excited about, as well as happy things in retrospect that we never thought we'd be doing, that our injury allowed us the opportunity. That old saying, when one door closes, another opens. And thank God for that. That saved the bacon and the attitude for a lot of us, that the doors that opened gave us an opportunity to experience some of life that we never likely would have had the opportunity had our brain injuries not happened. But the journey is the theme for the association. A little later, I'm going to play, there's another survivor, Christabel Braden, and she's had a song for a long, long time in my playlist called More to Me. And I'm going to play that maybe at the top of the hour if we take a break, or I'll play it for the outro. Very apropos for now. And in fact, they used a saying similar to that as the theme for Awareness Month last year. But this year, it's all about the journey. And so my notes were short, real short, if you noticed, this week. So I did invite callers. The number's 424-243-9540. If you'd care to share parts of your journey with us, again, 424-243-9540. And I'm going to bring Karen on right this minute. Karen, welcome. You're here.
I am here by the skin of my teeth, but I'm here. It is great to be here. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a part of the show again for another evening. And what a great time to be a part of the show during Brain Injury Awareness Month. Exciting stuff going.
Exactly. That was the other half of what I was going to say, is not only do we, I didn't finish my thought, I guess, about the two old-timers, that we both went decades. He, not as long as me, he was in a more progressive area, but we were discussing how until we were introduced to peer-to-peer support, which is what I would call it, met other brain injury survivors, that we were really pretty clueless, lost, and it was scary. Now, he immediately accepted that his life was going to be different and looked forward, had a much different, better maybe, I'll just leave it at different, attitude than I did. I really will claim ignorance more than a bad attitude. My doctors, as I mentioned, didn't warn me, and we didn't have any support groups, and I never met another brain injury survivor until I became part of this network in 2012. So I went from 95 to 2012 being completely lost. Now, I called. There were some associations and alliances, and there are quite a few that deal with ailments of the brain. And I was calling as a new desperate survivor looking for help. That time, there really wasn't any. There wasn't a psychologist that worked there or another survivor who volunteered there or was on the board who could field a phone call. I could read statistics like, you know, I was about to. I could learn a little more about brain injury, but, you know, if you're anything like I was a hot mess when I realized what had happened and was clueless about how to proceed. I needed some help and guidance that wasn't readily available. And so now people, I'm hoping, you know, they didn't make the internet back in 95. If they did and it was out there, not everybody had a computer on their desk, you know, and there weren't the support groups. I'm sure there wasn't social media who I'm really angry, and then I'll shut up and pretty much let Karen talk, and I'll just comment the rest of the show here and there. But I just wanted to say, you know, I had told Karen, you know, and most of you know that listen to the show, that I promote our show by posting it in several social media groups, just on Facebook and LinkedIn. I kind of gave up on Twitter a long time ago, X now. It seemed more political, and you ask me what time it is, and I tell you how the watch works. So not my thing. I still got the profile there, but it ended a couple of years ago, I guess, without a big period behind it. TikTok, I'm thoroughly against, won't go near it, not interested in Snapchat. Really changed my attitude a lot about social media, but probably 20 groups between LinkedIn and Facebook, and each week I post my shows and our shows, whatever. But today, again, I haven't heard from Facebook, which has been a pleasure for quite a while. And the only reason I want to mention it tonight is because I can. my show, my venue, my community standards. they can't kick me off here. And I wasn't going to bother writing to them, but they waited. I had gotten done posting the show in all of my usual places that I've done for 13 years, you know, almost 14. And a thing popped up that said I was guilty. I was being canceled. I was guilty spamming. And then they gave a thing where I could read about what spamming was and why it was against their community standards. And I wanted to copy the whole thing and read it, how totally, trying to think of the word, a nicer word than what I had in mind, but hypocritical that it is. And that if you wanted to appeal and they treat you like a child, that you have to document everything. So basically, you know, you have to do your 25-page book report and submit it to them, and you may or may not ever hear from them, and then they'll judge you and make the determination. But what I found interesting about the whole thing, and yeah, it made me angry, and I will warn you ahead of time, always look at braininjuryradio.com. That's where all of our shows are listed. There's a Facebook page. Not all of our hosts post their show there, unfortunately, but a place they can't escape if they book one is braininjuryradio.com. Write that down. Don't forget it. And my website for my shows, inaflash.org, both on Facebook, the actual .org, inaflash.org. I've got a Facebook page of that and my website. Those three places, if you want to check to see if is there going to be a show tonight, and there is a show every Wednesday anyway, you can just turn it on and see. But one of those three places is a place that you'll be able to look at to check if you don't see me show up in one of the other haunts. But, you know, what was interesting about the spam, and I won't go through all of it, but basically it's, you know, they were talking about things like selling something, trying to... Gee, I forget the litany of crap that fell under spam, but what I'm posting wasn't in that list. We've never asked for money. Brain Injury Radio, to Craig's credit, the one who founded us, we don't have commercials. We've never asked for money. It'd be great. I'll say it now. We never do, but, you know, we are a nonprofit. And if anyone ever wanted to make a contribution, I'm sure we'd be glad to take it. But we've never asked for money. Our hosts, we don't get paid. We all volunteer. We're doing this as a service, an educational service to help others. And a person, unlike Facebook will give you credit for, can choose on your own whether you want to listen or not. And hopefully everybody's adult enough that if it's not something they're interested in, they would just ignore it and not report it, since it truly does not violate anything. So I'm not going to do a book report and appeal what they had to say, but I had to kind of laugh as I went through it, because in between my shows, to keep the page active, you know, I'll put up an inspirational quote or something, and a lot of those get a lot of hits. And every time I do that, they forget the four-letter word. They spam me. Ask me if I want to pay X amount of money, I don't know, to somehow get more likes or to promote what it is that I've just posted. Not my shows, but little banner, cute sayings that I put up. They solicit me. They interrupt me by putting up a thing in front of my screen that inhibits me doing what I was doing, to try to sell me something. More and more ads are showing up there. Oh, and the other thing was about spamming was things that could put others in danger or make them feel uncomfortable. And I thought, wow, that is really ironic from a venue. I've been talking on Brain Injury Radio for a long time about the veterans and how 22 a day, unfortunately, and our hearts go out to them and their families, commit suicide. And now the fastest group of suicide is in the age 9 to 22 age group because of largely social media. They're buying into the likes, and it breaks my heart that they'll validate or judge themselves by how many likes or that they get or they don't get from strangers. And so I'm angry, like everybody gets sometimes, but particularly a brain injury survivor who's trying to post 20 shows today to help people. They let me post them all and then put up a thing that said that they took them all down to accuse me of something that they break every one of those rules every day themselves to the detriment of people, and we do not. And so that's all I'd like to say about that. But thank you, Karen, for letting me get that off my chest. And audience, you know, be careful of your kids. Between the sex trafficking and, you know, people judging themselves and how they feel about themselves by watching what others are doing, you know, those people paid a ton of money, all of social media, for scientists to come in the same way they did in casinos to see what makes you salivate, what will keep you online the longest, what will get you to hit that like button. It's all scientifically based and calculated from the very beginning. And that is not what we do here at Brain Injury Radio. And because it's Brain Injury Radio Month, and we're going to be talking about awareness, I hope someone from Facebook catches the show, or if you know anyone that works there, send the link to this show. And I hope they can become aware of a little bit about what brain injury is and why brain injury awareness is super important for people to know about, because it's so prevalent, and that we don't ask for money. We're not doing anything to hurt anybody. We want to support and help everybody. And I wish I could say the same for them. But welcome, new survivors, old survivors, caregivers, and all the rest of you guys. Glad to have you here tonight. Lobbing the ball over to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Kim. You know, Absolutely, it's imperative for us to be able to be here to support each other and to watch out for each other as not just a brain injury community, but a community of human beings. So it's appreciated that you're able to bring some of those things out and to fruition. And yes, a lot of the things we do when we're bringing awareness and telling our stories, we don't get paid for that in a financial way necessarily. I know that what we do here with Brain Injury Radio, we do out of the goodness of our heart and because we find it to be a calling and a desire to help others, so we're not having to recreate the wheel, if you were, but to bring awareness to the latest and greatest as we learn the latest and greatest as well. You know, each one of the 2.8 million Americans who sustain traumatic brain injuries in the U.S. each year, or 5 million Americans living with TBI-related disabilities, they have a story to share. And each story is unique. No story is the same. Yes, there may be some overlap. There may be some symptoms that we can resonate with between each other. However, it's up to us, survivors, families, caregivers, friends, to tell those stories. You know, it's really important to be able to spread the word by telling our community who we are, where we've been. You know, what have we accomplished? What do we hope to accomplish? What are our hopes and dreams? Because we're just like you guys. We're no different. We're all human beings that hope to be able to move forward in life. You know, 5.3 million Americans, you know, living with brain injury right now, and every one of them has a story to tell. So being able to listen is important. You know, every 9 seconds, someone in the U.S. sustains a brain injury. Every 9 seconds. That is almost unfathomable. We need more education. We need more funding. We need more research. You know, and we can't stress that enough. And the nice thing that is going on with the Brain Injury Association of America is that they are on the forefront of being able to provide legislative advocacy, you know, all the way to D.C. In fact, they're doing legislative push right now to reauthorize the TBI Act. And for those that aren't familiar with the TBI Act, the Administration for Community Living, also called the ACL, administers the TBI Act funding. And it's used for the TBI State Partnership Grant Program, which helps states increase access to not just services, but supports for individuals with TBI throughout their lifespan. And a lot of people may not even know that this TBI Act is even in place, but it's getting ready to expire, mm-hmm. and so they're trying to push to get it renewed. And it's also used for protection and advocacy. The TBI grant program for the advocacy piece of that. And it helps states provide advocacy services for people with brain injury. Now, currently, 31 states receive TBI grants, and even they are severely underfunded, as are all the PNA grants. Now, you know, we have more than 31 states. Why don't all the states have this grant? Why aren't all the states participating? Why aren't all the states, you know, putting forth the effort to take care of their constituents and the citizens within their state? And so that's what, when we say we need more awareness, we need more education, we need more funding, that's what we're talking about. You know, the Brain Injury Association of America urges Congress to expand the eligibility criteria for programs to include hypoxic and other acquired brain injuries, not just traumatic brain injuries.
Right, they've
are
added
also
two things.
To...
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. since it all started, you know, the field broadens because a few years back
Absolutely.
They classified concussion as a TBI. Now COVID, long COVID, if you will, is listed. And so the list grows. There used to be a pie chart, falls are the number one, but then accidents, domestic abuse, a list of other ways that you got TBIs, but they're actually adding, and I suppose it would still fall in the pie chart. The pie chart gets a lot thicker. You know, now we're finding that repeated concussions are leading to degenerative brain diseases. I'm sure, you know, that would fit in their ABIs or an extension of concussions, CTE, Parkinson's, and a lot of degenerative diseases. So, and then one other question I wanted to ask you about the 31 states. And I think, you know, yesterday I knew a woman who's there in D.C. helping with this, and I think they had 300 people. It was either yesterday or the day before yesterday. I lose track when we get late at night like this, but that's a very good turnout. But what I wondered, and I won't go into this, I'm just going to ask you the question, but do you know when they're doing that? Because you were asking about the other states, and something happened, and I did get details on it, but we don't have to discuss it. But in the beginning, there was just Brain Injury Association. And then some of the states, like mine's one of them, broke away and became a Brain Injury Alliance rather than part of the association. And if you want to know why or whatever, I can tell you, but the I don't need to. The question just is, do you know, I would suspect that the 31 states are probably not part of the association and have become alliances, the balance, the 20 some odd states. And I'm wondering, I didn't ask anyone, I knew what was going on in D.C., but does that extend, it extended into the ABI arena, but does it also extend into the alliance arena so that all state organizations, because no state has both. They either have the association or the alliance. So I'm wondering if this help in renewing the legislation and expanding the legislation is covering the alliances as well as the associations. Just a thought. And
yeah,
part of it has to
question.
Do with funding. I guess I will just say, give a little explanation to it, because you brought up funding and, you know, that what they're doing, obviously, it's a big push on funding. And if we're limited in where we can help educate and spread it, you know, without being accused of being spam. What happened was our state, for example, I don't know about yours, but it was an association, and there's 1 1/4 person that works there. A great gal is their full-time person who's been there for many, many, many years, and then because there's a lot of stuffing of envelopes and administrative things, there's a person funding enough for somebody who works very part-time to help with that administrative stuff. So there's one gal trying to do the whole banana for Nebraska. Now, when I asked her why all of a sudden we were being called an alliance and not an association, she explained to me that, and I get this because I'm in a couple totally unrelated associations, and you have to pay dues to an association every year. And for places that had smaller offices, you know, brain injury offices like ours, who had one full-time employee, they really couldn't afford to do anything they're supposed to be doing for us, advocacy, when more than half of what they were bringing in from the annual walk or whatever else they were doing was going to pay their dues. And that was true of, I think, Minnesota, and I'm not sure what the other 20-some states were, but they broke away from the association because they were smaller places that felt they couldn't afford to pay the dues. And so they're kind of, you know, the bad news about that is they don't get the resources that the association provides, and it must be polarizing. Like, it's polarizing to be the lone survivor. It must be a little polarizing to be the lone, you know, office in a given state. But the alliance states do communicate with each other, but they're not together as a group the way the associations are all tied to the main brain injury association. So I hope, I guess the only comment I'll make is I hope that politics wouldn't get in the way and that this fight would be, since it's not for us without us. I hope that what's going on in Washington is going to help all of the states that have, whether it's an association or an alliance, it's geared to be there to advocate for survivors and help their families. And I hope that the legislation covers, and I'm sorry, I don't know the answer, is going to help all those groups, all the states. That's all.
No, I appreciate the input there, Kim. There is, when she's talking about the alliance, for those that aren't clear on what the difference is between Brain Injury Alliance and Brain Injury of America, there's the United States Brain Injury Alliance, and their mission is essentially building state and national capacity to be able to create a better future alongside individuals affected by the brain injury, essentially. And their core values basically stem in three specific things, integrity, excellence, and impact. And they vow that they're going to actively listen and work together for a common purpose. They want to be able to model a positive example as they pursue high expectations, and being able to follow through on commitments, be dependable, and act as a support system to those with brain injuries. Now, those that are affiliated through the Brain Injury Alliance includes 17 states, Kim. There's 17 states that are affiliated through the Alliance. Now, when we look at the difference, so what's the difference really between the Brain Injury Association of America and the Alliance? My understanding, and surely if anyone's listening and can add more details on this, that would be amazing too. But my understanding about the Brain Injury Association of America is that they work to advance brain injury awareness, research, treatment, and education, and they also lobby at the legislative level. And so there's they both are equally important, because there's no one that's unimportant or lacks value when we're bringing awareness to such an important disease process. And I say disease process because those that are still surviving and coping with long-term chronic conditions, it can become a long-term disease process for them. And so, you know, just having more people out there bringing education, awareness, legislative support. There's no such thing as too many people. There's no such thing as too much support. There's no such thing as too much advocacy. They're both excellent organizations. They both have just a little bit slightly different individual focuses or strengths. They each have their strengths, and they both can play off of each other. Sorry, I got a cough, so I'm going to
mute. Yeah. Okay. Well, I know the Nebraska Alliance does legislation at the state government level. And their goals, really, all of the 17 were part of the association at one time. But I did get the idea that it was just the dues. You know, some are just so small that they don't have the money to legislate and to do some of the those core values when they're paying the dues. A lot of the bigger states,
well, they still legislate.
You know,
I don't want to give the impression that the Alliance doesn't legislate, because they do. In fact, in partnership with other national brain injury organizations, they participate in the Brain Injury Awareness Day on Capitol Hill. And that's the day that's designed to increase brain injury awareness among all congressional lawmakers and their staff. And the Brain Injury Alliance, also called USBIA, it provides member states with a variety of materials, just like the Brain Injury Association of America provides a variety of materials, including sample press releases, talking points, posters, advertisements, things that lay people, someone that is new to the brain injury community, or just people that are interested in being supportive and taking part in advocacy, they can use those samples to be able to promote brain injury awareness on a local level or on a national level either. You know, when we're talking about what we're trying to do with Congress, which is really important right now, with this TBI Act, I kind of want to go back to that a little bit, because that's a really important mm-hmm. focus that for all of us right now, because it's really going to make an impact in a lot of our ability to have ongoing care, rehabilitation, proper medical coverage. You know, just it involves so many things. You know, we want to urge Congress to require the Health and Human Services Secretary to examine the evidence base of brain injury as a chronic condition. You know, it's something that needs to be fully recognized as a chronic condition. We need to urge Congress to increase funding for the TBI Act to $25 million and appropriate. You know, when we're talking about that kind of money, $19 million goes to the state grant program so all states can participate, and that would give an increase to that fund of $11 million and $6 million to the PNA, that's the advocacy grant program, and that would give that program an increase of $3.5 million. Now, when people are like, okay, what really is the TBI Act? I've never even heard of it. What does that entail? And the TBI Act goes back to 1996. That's when President Clinton signed the Traumatic Brain Injury Act into law. And he did that on July 29th of that year. At the time, the TBI Act was the only federal legislation that specifically addressed TBI prevention, research, and service delivery through grants to states that were originally, looking back historically, they were administered by the Health Resources and Services Administration, or what some might be more familiar with, called the HRSA. Now, there's several different federal agencies that were involved. For example, Centers for Disease Control, also called CDC, and they were responsible for conducting the public information and education and prevention activities, and for really just determining the incidence and prevalence of TBI in the U.S. And the National Institute of Health, also called NIH, which is authorized to conduct basic and clinical research on TBI, including the research on prevention and diagnosis and treatment of TBI, and the general management of trauma. And the Administration for Community Living, some might just know that as ACL. And the ACL administers two grant programs. The first program, that is overseen by the Independent Living Administration, and it provides grants to states to improve access to service delivery. You know, it's not just about having the services available. It's about being able to have access to those services as well. And the second program that the ACL provides is, which is overseen by the Administration on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, to the designated protection and advocacy system in each state. So, you know, there's a lot of historical precedent set already. So it's not like we're trying to put something new in place. We're trying to expand and develop it so we can provide more education, so we can provide better resources, so we can provide better rehabilitation opportunities for those that are experiencing brain injury throughout the course of their lives. And
it's important to continue being seen and heard, because the funding that's out there, like you said, it's up for renewal. You never know when, you know, the government might see fit to use the money elsewhere. So, you know, advocacy is a job that's never done. And if you want to help in Brain Injury Awareness Month, on the website, and Karen was referring to the Brain Injury Association of America, it's BIA biausa.org, biausa.org. There's a letter. If you don't know exactly what you'd write, but you're a survivor or care or a caregiver, and you want to be part of this, but you can't go to Washington and you maybe don't have the funds to be able to help, the sheer numbers can help, and you don't have to worry about what to write or who to write it to. On the website, there are some sample letters. You can just copy, sign them, and send them to your congressman.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, there's also, are you familiar with the National Association of State Head Injury Administrators? Have you heard of that? NASHIA?
Just last week with my other guest, but no, I hadn't heard of
that.
They are pretty
young as an organization. They just had their third annual SEED Summit, and the NASHIA stands for National Association of State Head Injury Administrators, and they held their third annual summit at the beginning of March, which was the beginning of Brain Injury Awareness, on March 5th and 7th, and Brain Injury Awareness Day on March 5th and 6th in Washington, D.C. And the summit is for partners who are directly engaged in building state service and support systems. And it includes state program directors and staff, state affiliates, advocacy organizations and staff, P&A systems, advisory board chairs, but it can also include other influencers that are at the decision-making table, you know, at the local level, the regional level, the state level, national level. So the NASHIA Hill Day, as they call it, is really for anyone. But in addition to that, they're also very active in the brain injury community as well. So we've got a lot of great organizations out there. You've got the United States Brain Injury Alliance, the Brain Injury Association of America, NASHIA, and those are just the big organizations. That's not to mention all the smaller organizations, other nonprofits, other for-profit, public and private organizations, and then, you know, it trickles down to, you know, bloggers and educational websites and educational and brain injury healthcare professionals, and the list goes on and on to the plethora and expansion of all this community that is working to be able to offer a more expanded quality of life for those that have lived through a brain injury and continue to forge forward.
Right. And it's interesting that when you said that, I mentioned my guest last week had his in 75, and apparently brain, I don't want to mix anybody up out there, Brain Injury Association was called something like the Head Injury Association because he was on their board in the later 90s or right around 2000, maybe the later 90s, if he happened in 95. It was like probably too soon after the vastness of his injury, but he met the person that was the president of the organization at the time, and she invited him to serve on the board, and he did. And then they had a name change. So it's interesting, all these years later, when you said it, I thought maybe, but that's good. They started another group. It is great that there's a lot of groups out there representing or spreading the awareness. And, you know, I was surprised not – I've always looked at it the same, because being on Brain Injury Radio, very functional words, it wasn't called TBI Radio. It was called Brain Injury Radio. So whether you'd come here with an ABI like me or a TBI like you, it was Brain Injury Radio. So I feel blessed that I was raised in this forum to be all inclusive. But, you know, there's a Brain Injury Association, Brain Aneurysm, excuse me, Association. I'm sure the stroke group has. Anyway, all of the ABI that's got incorporated into the pages of the Brain Injury Association, they all have their own groups too. Like, now it's kind of confusing because March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. September has always been Brain Aneurysm Awareness Month. And there's a stroke month. So if you're into ribbons in different colors, there's, you know, probably a month for everything. But, and they called it mild. God, I hate that word, mild. Because when you live through any of the brain injuries, when you're the one that's living through it, it just seems like mild isn't a good descriptive word to use for the one going through it. But I guess, you know, whether there's one or 21, if they're out there spreading the word about brain injuries that people don't know, like I had never even heard of a TBI or an ABI or an aneurysm until I got here. So I went from 95 to, well, in 95 I found out the word aneurysm when I found out I had one, but I didn't have a realistic picture painted for me, yes, about what happened and what it was, no, about the residuals that I was going to be faced with so far for the rest of my life. Nobody talked about that. And nobody, now I know for a while our university hospital in the neuro department was actually, and it was because they didn't want to deal with it, no two ways about it, they do the surgery, right? The car going through the body shop. And blessed we are to have them. But when it comes to coming back and saying, you know, I have an awful lot of headaches, or my memory is not good. You know, my short-term memory is not good compared to how it was before. Or I get, you might not even know the word, sensory overload yet, but buzzing lights, bright lights, too many voices going on. When you start describing those things, they don't, a lot of the traditional medical model doesn't know what to do with that. And so for a while, some of the hospitals were pretty good about stuffing a brochure in your hand to the association, you know, passing it on. So give them a call. You know, they know a lot about this kind of stuff. And I thought that was good, that at least instead of, I don't know, or sending you directly to some kind of medication and then to a psychiatrist, which was usually, that was kind of the drill back in the day, and still in a lot of places, that because these groups had formed to be advocates and to help spread education, they at least were familiar with people who were saying the same things and could help you not feel like a polarized alien, like you were the only one going through it, and give you some reassurance and some knowledge. They might not be able to fix it for you, but they could let you know that you're not alone and maybe give some suggestions. And I think that was good. So, you know, another thing, when you're at your doctor, whether it's a neurologist or a neurosurgeon or even your internist, really, a lot of people default to that. When the surgery's over, the surgeon is over, it seems, these days. So encouraging the medical profession to refer survivors to associations, alliances, take your pick. If they've got a brochure or a website, you might just say to your doctor, you know, if you're not as unshy as Karen and I are, you know, you might just say, you might want to check out this brochure or this website, you know, if you have other patients like who have similar issues as I do, you might want to refer them, because then hopefully between the doctor and the association, they're getting a little more information, and information is power.
Oh, absolutely. It is powerful. You know, and when we're talking about key messages and what is, you know, the point of the key messages of this campaign, the campaign being My Brain Injury Journey, right? Telling our stories, using our voices, being a listening for each other. Some of the high-level messages that we're wanting to focus on for the campaign focus really on several aspects of brain injury. And in many cases, a brain injury can be a chronic condition. It's, I know I mentioned that earlier, but I want to clarify. It's not an isolated one-time event for some folks. For some, and they don't have any lingering symptoms or lingering issues. And the vast majority, though, have all very unique symptoms and experiences that don't overlap. And then there's others that do. There's a significant gap between public perception and reality when it comes to understanding brain injury. And unless someone has lived the experience, whether it's the person with a brain injury, or if it's someone in the survivor's inner circle, or it's a medical professional who has experience treating a wide range of those brain injuries, many just don't understand that there can be recurring and physical, emotional, behavioral, or cognitive effects. And sometimes those effects can last a lifetime. And brain injuries can also change and shift over time. Some parts of a person's brain injury may improve. Some may plateau. Some may get worse. Sometimes the changes and the shifts are positive, and you'll see that continual improvement. Other times, though, there can be negative effects, too, with brain injury survivors experiencing additional challenges. So, you know, just making the assumption that a person is all healed and better because they look better is not a healthy or knowledgeable assumption to make. And you know, when we're talking about some brain injury facts, we've already said, and you'll hear us say this time and time again, and you'll hear this throughout any brain injury advocate or in the awareness community as a whole, every brain injury is different. If you've seen one brain injury, you've only seen one brain injury. Because there's an often repeated adage among the brain injury community that there is no two brain injuries that are the same. And that's factual. Because everyone is individual. Two people could experience the same exact injury in the same exact places on their head, and they could have totally opposite experiences with symptoms and lasting effects. That, you know, it's just so individualistic. And the My Brain Injury Journey campaign to really highlight that uniqueness while also pointing out the very personal and long-term nature of brain injury. And brain injury, it's a journey, right? It's not something,
yeah.
It's not like a, it's a marathon. It's like you're training for a marathon because you're training your brain. And you're training your brain over and over and over. It's repetitive. And the destination is unknown. You don't know where you're going to end up. You don't know if you're going to get all the things back that you had before your injury. You don't know what it's going to look like in a year or 5 years or 10 years. All we can do is speculate. You know, you could have a great recovery going on, and all of a sudden you start going backwards. You know, you could you could have no recovery for several years, and then all of a sudden you start having really great leaps and bounds in your recovery, and less and less symptoms that you're having to deal with. You know, then again, it's so different for each person. I know for myself, I can tell the differences of when I first got my injury and now. I definitely can handle bright lights better than I could even 5 years ago. However, they still bother me. You know, sometimes if the sun is too bright, it makes me feel nauseous. And, you know, it's just, so there's sometimes things affect me. You learn how to live with the injury. You know, when you have any chronic disease process or you have any chronic pain process, you learn to accept it as your new normal. And it becomes so much of who you are that you just learn to work around it. It's like if you have a limp or you have a broken bone, you know that you can get a cast or a surgery to fix that bone and that fracture. And within 6 to 8 weeks, if your body's healing normally, then that fracture will heal. And you'll be able to go through therapy and things will be good as new. You can't really say that about the brain because you don't know what each person's brain is going to be able to do. Some people are able to rebuild those synapses and advance faster than other people. Some they'll still have some changes that take place, but not as much as people that may have had the same injury. So it's just very, very different. And that's why it's very important not to compare yourself to other people who are recovering. It's important not to compare yourself with other people who have accomplished more than maybe you have. Maybe they've had a bigger injury than you, but they're doing more than you. Don't get caught up in that crap of comparing yourself to them. Each person is different. Each person evolves at their own pace. There's a lot of things that go into it. It has to do, you know, with your heredity, with your health before the brain injury, your health during, your health after. There's so many things that play into that. Your brain health at the time of the injury when it took place, your age when it took place. You know, whether you were experiencing stress in your life, whether you already had other issues going on, you know, if you have someone that, for example, if someone has ADHD or ADD before they sustain a brain injury, then they have a brain injury. The brain injury has a tendency to damage that same part that can trigger ADHD, what looks like ADHD and ADD symptoms. That's why there's a lot of misdiagnosis, and people are overdiagnosed with ADHD and ADD when often they never had it beforehand, but they're having these ADHD and ADD symptoms. It's because it's a result of the brain injury they sustained that wasn't properly diagnosed as a brain injury. And so, you know, there's, and if someone does have ADHD and ADD, and then they sustain a brain injury, it can exacerbate those symptoms. Or if someone has a propensity towards mental health issues, like if they have a hereditary traits in their family of mental health challenges, and then they get, their body experiences trauma, or they develop a brain injury, it can actually awaken or trigger, if you will. I don't really like that word, but it's the only word I can think of here in the moment. But it triggers or wakes up those personality and that hereditary aspect of their DNA, and can cause that personality disorders to develop as a result of the brain injury. Now, sometimes they have those things that are dormant and they are just coping with them their whole lives, and the injury actually causes that to
wake up.
Right, to become active. So, you know, and then a lot of, you know, people get misdiagnosed all the time with mental health issues that stemmed from a brain injury. And so, and vice versa, you know, a combination of the two. So each, going back to the whole point of each being exactly individual injuries, and each story is so different. And that's the importance of telling your story. That's the importance of, no matter where you are on the brain injury spectrum, whether you are new and experiencing it for the first time, whether you don't even know where to begin in getting help for yourself or helping someone that you know, or whether you've been a survivor for 20 years or 30 years or 50 years, all of your stories, all of our stories are important.
Well, and they do evolve too, you know, statistically, and I can't tell you the statistic, but I'm sure you've heard it too, that people who have had brain injuries are statistically more prone to have repeated or another brain injury. And a lot of speculation as to why that is. But, you know, just two quick things. That happened to me in 2015, I fell and got a whiplash concussion, and that really exacerbated my leftover symptoms from 1995, and made them a lot worse. And as far as the misdiagnosis thing goes, you know, my aneurysm was misdiagnosed in 1995, but a friend of the family went up a ladder to try to clean out the gutters and fell 15 feet and hit his head. But you can kind of relate to this part, not that, but something that happens all too common, all too frequently, in the emergency environment, or, you know, with the EMIs or the emergency room, is you know, this guy also broke something in his back, broke a leg, broke, I don't know, a hand. I mean, there was lots and lots of injuries. But when he fell 15 feet off the ladder, he hit his head too, but there was no blood or anything. So there's a tendency to look first at the obvious, the things that are bleeding or obviously broken, and pay attention to those things. Ask you if you hit your head. This guy said yes, but I hear this every week in different, whether it's concussion or something else. But he told them yes, and they said, oh, you've probably got a concussion then, you know, falling that far, not a big, you know, not a big deal. And they went on to about what kind of a brace he'd be wearing or what they were going to be doing for his back and his leg and those obvious wounds. Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe they shouldn't tell you so that you're looking for it in case it never does happen. But that wasn't true necessarily, that his concussion isn't a big deal, don't worry about it. Because the symptoms might not manifest right now. They might not manifest at all, and they might have been right. However, comma, as you know, it could be 2 weeks, 2 months, a year from now, and subtle, not like that, not like the falling from the ladder, that incident, or the incident of a car accident, or the incident of an aneurysm rupturing. It can be something like, okay, I'll give you one of mine. I was a voracious reader. That was something that I really liked to do, not on e-books or anything like that. I liked the tactile feeling of the book, the activity of curling up on the couch and actually making that an activity. Now I can't do that anymore. I can read short things. I can read our intros and read a brochure. I work on my computer a lot, but what happens when I try to read a big book is that I read the same line over and over, and my mind kind of drifts away. I can't keep up with what it is that I'm reading to be able to read a big book anymore. And since that surgery I had at the beginning of the year, one thing that's gotten a lot worse is I can work on the computer and do things like, you know, book the shows that, like I was telling you about, but something, or no matter what I'm doing, if I'm writing an email or whatever, everything is taking me longer to do, and I'm finding it frustrating because, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and like you said, some things get better, worse, whatever. You know, I'm finding myself transposing letters or numbers, you know, when I didn't have to use spell check before. You know, I'm good with words, and I've been a good writer, but not so much right now. You know, it's for the 2022, starting then. And so I didn't mean to short circuit that and make it about me, but with this gentleman, you know, it could be something subtle, like maybe, and I don't know, maybe the guy has always had a temper, but let's say the guy hasn't had a, generally has been a pretty even-keeled person. And suddenly the family starts noticing that he's getting rageful or spiteful or having anger tantrums more often. Or the rest of what I was going to say is that I get so eye-weary now.
Mm-hmm. Same.
That I just have to stop. I just have to stop. And it frustrates me so much because, you know, I already went through the exercise of making a list, a realistic list, you know, not the 10 things that I need and really want to get done, but putting them in the order and being satisfied with the things that I do get done. You know, you can, you mentioned earlier, don't compare yourself with others. It's hard to not compare yourself with yourself sometimes.
Oh, that
you know?
Is so hard not to do.
It's like
especially
okay.
Comparing yourself with who you were before as opposed
yeah,
to.
Yeah, even 2 years
are,
ago.
Even,
you know?
Or 2 days ago, even.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's very true. You know, very true. But. You know, so the person that gets told, you know, that thing that wasn't obvious, like the, you know, the bone sticking out of their leg or, you know, the broken back or blood, you know, oh, you hit your head, you probably have a concussion. I would really love to think that at this point, the medical community would know more about concussions and not to make a blanket statement like that. You know, keep an eye on it if you notice any changes. And I don't know how they would do it. I'm not a doctor, but I mean, what people come up with, what I came up with when I had the whiplash concussion was really frequent headaches and having to go lay down in a dark room and breathe. To bring my heart rate down from the blasting headaches that I was getting from this snapping my neck, you know, from this whiplash concussion. And I had to be more intentful, pay more attention walking, so I wouldn't trip, a little ataxia, you know,
mm-hmm.
little aphasia. And so there's things that, you know, this guy, it may or may not be nothing, but he doesn't have any warning. And what I learned, and again, not everyone is like this, but I had been around doing radio. It wasn't like the first time where I knew nothing. I had been doing shows with some of the best experts around the country about a lot of different topics. And the thing that scared me about that concussion is I wasn't in my right mind and I didn't know it. I'd get those headaches and I would go take one Tylenol and one Advil and go in and lay down in the dark room and breathe through the pain of the headache until it would calm down. My blood pressure would calm down and I'd calm down from it hurting so much. Everybody might not be like that, but there's so many different things that can come up later from a concussion and a person I didn't even realize, and I've said it before, my mom, about a month after this happened, and it took a month, you know, my mom and my husband, within like 3 days of each other, that was a coincidence, said, boy, you're sure having, seems like you're having a lot of headaches lately. And then the light bulb, the host light bulb went on, and I was like, it was that fall. I believe I have a concussion because it ain't normal. You know, that's not my normal or anybody else's to line up 4 or 5 times a week with these blasting headaches. And I didn't have the awareness to know that that wasn't right. And so now that I've seen that that can happen, not that that's going to happen with everybody, somebody might recognize it immediately, but to tell someone it's just a concussion, it frustrates me the amount of misdiagnosis that still goes on, not this guy necessarily, but that still goes on today. You know, back in 95, I didn't like it, but people knew a lot less. In 75, they probably knew a lot less than that. So, you know, I guess I got past that a little. But when we're up to 2023, and there's been the kind of coverage, there's been like movies that have come out about things and more research and things like the different foundations that are studying brains, you know, where you can leave your brain. And there's information about that on the association page also. But, you know, I hope that's the case with this guy and his obvious things just heal. But, you know, I also hope he recognizes if his, you know, he's reading the paper like he does every night and, you know, suddenly he's seeing a little double or not able to read the paper at the pace that he was able to do before, or has personality changes or feels more fatigue than he's used to. You know, those are symptoms of his concussion, not his broken leg, likely. So, we need advocates, but you also, you know, need to try by getting this information and have an awareness month. It's for everybody, even those of us survivors who have been around for a while. Because when I found out, like I said, I wasn't in my right mind. My thinker wasn't working properly. After that concussion, I thank God that I am a host, that when I got those two cues from, I didn't pick up my own cues, but when my mom and Gary within a couple days said the same thing, that the light bulb went off. Because had I not been here, hearing these stories, hearing your stories out there, I might not have realized I needed to go talk to someone. You know, and really what I got out of that was another diagnosis, you know, post-concussion syndrome. But in any case, we really want that awareness out there, not only among us, but in the medical community. You know, the fact that they're in the medical community doesn't necessarily mean that they specialized in TBI. You know, that might have been a chapter or a paragraph in their studies, depending on what their specialty is. They've probably treated tons of people with brain injuries and didn't even know it. I know several people now, and I'm not trying to judge it, just like you don't want to judge an alcoholic. That's up to them to do. But, you know, there's a few people I know that I'm pretty certain, you know, if you placed bets that they have a brain injury and they don't know it, you know. And one of them was a boxer for a lot of years, and there's things I recognize, even though our injuries are different. There's some things that I recognize that seem a little off, and he has no idea. You know, nobody ever told him just because he got biffed in the head, you know, 195 times or kicked in the head. There was martial arts and boxing. He has no idea about the repeating, you know, repeating himself or modulation of mood kind of a thing. You know, he doesn't have any idea himself, and nobody's ever diagnosed him. And there's probably a lot of people going around like that. So when you see the statistics and they seem huge, and they are, understand too that there's quite a few people out there, likely even our military, ones that suffered blast injuries, were in that environment where people were getting blast injuries that did get diagnosed, you know, that may be having symptoms that they can't account for, and they haven't been diagnosed. And so that's why the more we can get the word out and spread the awareness, not only through the community, but through the medical community, the better, because that's where people are going to maybe go. I mean, where else do you go? Go to your doctor, you know, if things don't seem right. So let's help our doctors know some of these things and some of these resources, so they might be able to help. And, you know, checking out the associations and the alliances and writing letters to your congresspeople, because, you know, we wouldn't want our funding pulled when what we're trying to do is, you know, get maintain the help we have and expand the help we have with the problem. Concussions have gone on forever, you know, but when CTE popped up as a result of repeated concussions, when long COVID has popped up because of the pandemic, you know, just when you think you've seen all the brain in your injuries you could see, you know, some other contingency comes, you know, out of the ethers, and there's yet something else, you know, that can affect the brain, whether it's from the external or the internal. And as we age, our brain starts shrinking anyway, and for a lot of us with brain injury, like I was 35, by the time I was 40, and I won't exaggerate it, but let's say that it, like another 10 years workout had been on my brain, I had the brain more of a 45 or 50 year old at 35, you know, give me the year to get better. So 36, you know, now, and I've got a birthday coming up, and I was thinking about it, and I thought, God, you know, the way the last year has been, and some of it's been extreme stress, but I also had some eye surgery, and with, you know, the virus out there and the stress of loss in my family, loss of my family, and having surgery that wasn't successful, that had complications, that drug out for 6 months, and then the last 6 months of the year, another health issue that came up and surgery, you know, that stress and change in sleeping patterns. And that's another thing, you know, a person with a concussion might experience, or a brain injury, difference in sleeping pattern, either want to sleep all the time or can't sleep at all, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, when you're just looking for at changes that might be subtle changes and not like a lightning bolt, it makes it difficult if you don't have any awareness. Then it's not really something we can figure out on our own, I think, most of the time, unless we've read a lot or listened a lot. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting listening to you. There's some things you're saying that I'm like, oh, my gosh, yes, me too. Exactly. That's exactly right. And then there's other things where I'm like, I haven't experienced that part of it. You know, so just going back to how individual it is for each person, I will say that I've been very fortunate that I've had a really great family support them through all of this, and I continue to have that family support. And I have an amazing husband who has never wavered. He's been there with me through the whole thing. He knew me before, during, and after, and he decided to stick around. So I'm very grateful for that. That being said, you know, it's not been easy. And not been easy for either one of us. It's changed so many dynamics within our marriage, within our relationship as not just a couple, but as being parents. Yeah, absolutely. You know, just the shift in parenting roles and, you know, just throughout the recovery process, and you're always having to kind of reinvent your relationship and your roles as you heal. And when I say as you heal, that healing applies to both individuals, not just the person with the brain injury. You know, and I notice, though, that for myself, I really struggle more with some of the lingering effects when I'm more stressed or when I'm exorbitantly tired. It could be positive stress, too. It's not necessarily negative stress. When people hear stress, they often think, oh, negative, negative, negative. It could be something exciting and wonderful and positive, and I could still get cognitively fatigued from the excitement. And so it's not just something that's related to something negative. And so navigating through this process is sometimes, as much as it's been the, as, let me start over, as much as it has been a part of me for the last 10 years. And, you know, I've learned to kind of just do things automatically around it. Like, you know, I avoid certain things or certain situations just as a natural way of living now. There are some times when that's not enough. And, you know, it's like the last 6 weeks have been overwhelming. I've just been like, oh, it's just been so much stuff going on. And, you know, I've gone back to school, which you know about that. And I've talked about that here on the show off and on. And, you know, I can't take as many classes as I would have been able to before, or even when I was younger. You know, and so I have to try and pace myself. But the classes that I'm taking right now, the one specifically I'm involved in, it involves math. And math has never been a strong suit for me. However, after the brain injury, it became a disability for me. And, you know, it became something that, where even basic math was very challenging for me at that point. Now I've worked hard to try and develop that and expand on, you know, my understanding and knowledge around that subject for the last 10 years, just to get back to a normalcy with it. But this class has had me so frustrated. You know, I joke around saying that I'm a recovering perfectionist because I've always had in my personality, even before the wreck, that I like to do things as perfectly as possible. You know, I wanted A's and B's. If I got a C, I cried. You know, I felt like such a failure. And that was what I put on myself even in high school. You know, I just had this desire to do things well. And I expected that of myself. And it wasn't that my parents really put that on me, because they did encourage me to do my best. But if I didn't make a grade, for example, they're like, oh, it's okay. It's just you're gaining experience, you know. You learn from it, you move on. Not for me. For me, that was an epic failure. Now, you add a brain injury on top of that, and if you are someone that is used to functioning at a certain mental level, and any part of that level is diminished, where you would just seem like, oh, you're just average. Everybody else has that same problem with that same thing, and you never had that problem before. Mm-hmm. It's annoying, number one, to hear people say that. And number two, it feels awful inside yourself because you know what you used to be capable of and you know where you're faulty at now. But over the last 10 years, I haven't been re-enrolled in school for the last 10 years, you know? So I haven't had that kind of, I guess, pressure and that kind of the need to memorize large amounts of information. And I already struggle with my short-term memory quite a bit. And I have all these strategies in place that I use in my daily life. I use my whiteboard, my planner, my notebooks, post-it notes. Like, I have all these things around me. And then when it comes time for the classes and we have to take a test, you can't utilize any of that. And then I'm screwed. And so it's just like, okay, I don't have any of my strategies, and I can remember, like, if it's a brand new topic that I've never studied before, then I can kind of remember, like, the skeleton pieces of it. And if I could talk about it, it would be much easier than trying to remember answers to questions on a test. And so I found myself on one of my tests recently in a subject that I know very well and felt very confident about, I failed that test. And I just felt like my world had ended. I was like, oh my gosh, this subject that I know so much about, that I feel so confident about, I could talk about anything in it, and I failed the test. What the heck is wrong with me? But, you know, going through financial stress, you know, there's been a lot of changes. My son started a job, which, because he started a job, that increased our household income, so they dropped our insurance because we had Medicaid, so they dropped all of the Medicaid for everyone in the house. And so my husband hasn't been able to get his diabetic medication. He hasn't been able to get his sensors. You know, I haven't been able to do some of the medical things I need to do. You know, I have Medicare, which covers some things but not other things. And it's just, it's been a doozy. And on top of it, you know, I've been sick. And I noticed that whenever I'm really cognitively fatigued, when I'm feeling very overwhelmed about things, I get sick easier. My immune system plays havoc with me. And in addition to that, when you were talking about reading earlier, I used to be an avid reader as well. You know, I could read several books a week from front to back and really thoroughly enjoy them. We've talked about this before about our reading, how we love to curl up with our books and curl up with a blanket and a hot cup of tea or hot chocolate or coffee or whatever. And, you know, just really get immersed in it. That is one thing that has changed since the wreck for me as well, is my reading capacity. Yes, I can spend time on the computer. I can blog. I can write papers. However, it takes me 3 to sometimes 10 times as long to do those things. And you know, I think that's what I like about the online classes and the online options that are offered nowadays, is that I can take my time to think about what I want to do. I'm not on a deadline. I'm on a deadline. There's due dates for things. But what I mean is that instant moment where you're asked the question and you have to recall something immediately, that's challenging for me. You know, I really depend on having all those strategies around me. And reading these textbooks, two of the classes I'm taking, there's a lot of heavy reading. One is Introduction to Ethics, for example. And I absolutely love the curriculum, and I love the instructor is really great. And, you know, it's not about the course material being boring. It's just a lot of reading. And when I'm trying to read or even listen, because I get the e-text book as well, so I'll listen to the robot voice read to me the text, but then I'll also read the text with it. And, you know, but as I'm reading, I fall asleep. And it's not because I'm tired, because I can feel completely rested. And before I know it, I'm having to go back and listen to that gosh darn thing multiple times. And I could absolutely resonate with what you said about reading the same line over and over. Because I could read that same line over and over. Like, I know what the words are. I could I could easily define each word individually. You know, it's not that I'm an unintelligent individual. I understand what it's saying. But for some reason, there's that part where I can just read it. And it's like I'm looking at another language completely, and I don't – it's that process.
Yeah.
It's not the lack of understanding. It's the lack – or it's the reduced processing speed, and that that getting it from what you're seeing into your head. And it works the same way with speaking and trying to find my words when I'm speaking, that aphasia piece, where I know what I want to say. I know I can picture it in my mind. In my mind's eye. However, getting it out my mouth is often a completely different story. So, you know, it's just those frustrations. You know, I've noticed that those have been greater for me over the last 6 weeks. And I felt like, I told my husband, I feel like feel like I'm going backwards, because I just I'm so tired all the time. Not like I'm tired because I need to sleep, but just mentally exhausted, just emotionally
mentally
exhausted, cognitively exhausted.
And
it's not the lack of interest. The lack of interest, because the interest is there.
No.
My passion for life is there. I have the desire to do things. I am the best list maker, probably. I could compete with some of the best list makers of the world. I can organize lists. I can make lists. I can give advice on how to organize to other people. I'm really great at putting a plan together. The problem that I have is the motivation to put the plan into action. And it's not because I don't want to. It's because sometimes I feel like I physically capable of doing it. You know, sometimes I'll stare at this assignment and I'll look at it and I know what I need to do. I know how to do it, but for some reason my brain just will not allow me to move on it. And it's so upsetting. And then it makes you feel sad and worthless, and you feel like a failure, and you feel like all these, what I call stinking thinking. You know, my mom has called it when I was growing up, if you're talking poorly about yourself or putting yourself down, you need to quit that stinking thinking. And, you know, I find myself talking to myself out loud I'll say, Karen, knock off that stinking thinking. That's ridiculous. You know, okay, let's focus on, you know, what you can do. What are you capable of right now? And being able to say to my instructors, you know, I'm sick this week. I'm not able to do this. You know, recognizing and being realistic with where I'm at physically and cognitively and all the ease, right? Mentally, emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. Being able to communicate that is really important. And having educators that are willing to be flexible with your health flares is really important too. So, you know, again, bringing that awareness, being able to advocate for yourself even. And, you know, I'm just using my education as a student in higher education as an example. But it really applies
good
to
example.
All of my life. I mean, there's some days when I looked at my husband and I said, Rick, so sorry, but I just can't cook. Not today. I can't pick up the kids. I just can't leave the house. I just can't do it. I can't do it. It felt like too much to go outside. And it just felt like too much thinking. It felt like too much peopling. It felt like too many crowds, too much. It was too much. When you're driving, you have to be aware of so many things. And if I don't feel confident to drive, I don't. Now, I'm fortunate to where I have my husband, I have my mom, you know, there's other things that I have in place. You know, sometimes I have to force myself because I have no option. You know, if my husband's out of state for work, my son still needs to get to his bus stop for school in the morning. So, yeah, guess what? I'm taking him. But, you know, that a brain injury just really creates that sense of, and there's other things that create it too, but I'm not going to get into, again, comparing all that. But a brain injury really, for me, it creates this constant state of vulnerability, this state of loss of control. And guess what? I like to be in control. So not just of my thinking, but of my environment. So when I'm feeling like I'm out of control or dealing with stuff I'm not able to control, it makes things feel scary and it makes things feel impossible. And it makes things feel unattainable, I guess, is, you know, what I want to say. You know, and the demand, the brain injury, especially as I'm getting older, it demands that I give up control. And I don't like that. I don't like feeling vulnerable, and I don't like asking for help, and I don't like... You know, I'm an independent woman. I've always been a strong, independent person. And to be able to, you know, and there's part of me that from a spiritual aspect, maybe this was a lesson I was given in life to learn to give up control and to be okay with it. But at the same time, but, you know, that's me trying to always look at things in a optimistic way. Is that just
doesn't
trying
make
to
it less frustrating?
It doesn't.
Yeah.
But all that.
Yeah, I do that too. Still pisses me off.
Right. I mean, I could go on and on. We both could about our stories, and you know, I do want to say this because I know we're getting towards the end of our time. I had some really great providers throughout the course of my rehabilitation journey. The place, though, where I got the most help were the online support groups with people that from like brain injury support groups. When I first discovered brain injury support group and I read the people's comments and I heard the way that they talked, I remember crying and I remember the tears falling down my face and drenching my keyboard. And I remember just feeling so relieved, so relieved that someone understood me finally, that I wasn't crazy,
yeah.
that this was real, you know, and
yeah.
It just made me feel like recovery was possible then. It gave me hope. And that's the importance of being able to share our stories. My brain injury journey, your brain injury journey, it's important. It matters. It absolutely is valuable. It gives us
okay,
hope.
I've got to cut in. We've got just a little over 3 minutes left, and Christabel Braden, I think I'll close by saying thank you to Karen and spread the word around. We're the point of this song is that we're people first, and there's more to us than our injury. Christabel Braden, you can look up at ChristabelBraden.com or look her up on YouTube. She was at Brain Injury Awareness Day in D.C. the other day singing, and I'll be back next week with Dr. Maria. Thank you tonight, Karen, and good night, and God bless everyone. We got just over 2 minutes on the clock with the 3 minute song. So I will just say goodnight and thanks so much for being here. We appreciate you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Who have I become? Wrapped up in a memory. Where do I belong? It's been so long, and every time I try to make sense of anything, find that I'm stressed about everything. This isn't who I used to be. When the waves came and when the storm raged, found myself falling.